Happy Christmas from Radio Arian. Have a pro-white Christmas and a diversity-free new year. And remember, a kebab is not just for Christmas. You're listening to The Daily Traditionalist with Matthew Highmark at RadioArian.com.
Hello, comrades. This is your host of The Daily Traditionalist, Matthew Heimbach. And I have joining me today a very special guest. And actually, we're going to be taking a trip. You know, one of the most important things of nationalism is knowing what's going on in other parts of the world. I mean, this is the beauty of the internet. It is the beauty of the technology that we have before us to be able to know what is going on with struggles in other European countries and, of course, around the world. It's a very exciting thing to be able to hear about different perspectives from European nationalists. And this is a voice that you'll probably have heard before on previous editions of the show and who does an amazing amount of work. I'm not going to do too much of an intro because I think he can speak for himself. So Klaus, introduce yourself to our listeners if they haven't heard you before, because you have been in the news. There's all sorts of excitement going on about the work that you're doing. And of course, you're a dedicated longtime nationalist. So let's just dive in and give the folks a bit of an intro.
Yeah, well, my name is Klaus. Thanks for having me on, by the way.
And, of course.
Yeah, people mostly know me as a, boat sinker, doing silly drawings and stuff. But, yeah, we also started doing, besides just, propaganda work, also doing a regular podcast here in Denmark. And we've been doing that for a while, and it's, we've had a steady increase in listenership. But then we were waiting for something to blow up. And then we just, this weekend, we got a major article in one of the big newspapers, actually featuring Matthew Heimbach as the cover photo.
that is too funny.
Yeah, it's a picture from Charlottesville. One of my friends, he immediately said, "Wait, isn't that Matt? Hey, Matthew Heimbach?" Yeah, he's right there in the middle, yeah. So welcome aboard, the Danish media.
Well, now I know I'm probably not going to be able to visit, if I cause too much of a stir. Eventually, I'm going to run out of EU countries that I haven't done something in or like been in the media in. Because God bless the Schengen zone. It's horrible for the demographics of Europe, given the migrant invasion. But it's really great for political dissidents to like be able to just move throughout Europe without border checkpoints. Not that I'm banned from anywhere other than the UK, but I don't like to flash myself too much if I'm, you go to a border checkpoint and like, yeah, I'm here, here to do, racism in your country. Please let me in.
Yeah. I mean, they're pretty strict with these things nowadays. So I have know a couple of guys who just went to participate in Charlottesville and they got banned from entry. They did nothing wrong. They weren't arrested or anything. They just can't go to the United States anymore. So.
Well, I mean, it just goes to show, I mean, we're really facing off against the same enemies, I mean, because the intelligence services, whether you're in France or in Germany or the UK or the United States or Canada, really, if you're part of that like NATO bloc, everyone's working together. I mean, so like the officials we face off against and the policies, I mean, we still have the First Amendment to some degree here in the United States. We, of course, have the Second Amendment. But like a lot of the ways it seems that the state works, it's basically like we're just living in like one giant mega city because, so many of the elites, they share information, they work together, they collaborate on all these things to try and disrupt nationalism, to try and disrupt, people wanting to have sovereignty and identity and things like that. So we're actually, it's not just like Brussels. It's not just Washington, D.C. It's not just New York. It's the whole thing. It's this whole infrastructure stretching across the Atlantic where all the Jewish elites and their Gentile lackeys are working together to try and make it as difficult as possible for nationalists to work together and support one another. That terrifies them when nationalists work together.
Yeah, and it doesn't seem to matter who's in charge anywhere. I mean, it could be Clinton could be the president or Trump could be the president. The deep state still cooperates to harass dissidents. I mean, the Swedes I know that can no longer go to the United States. I mean, I'm sure the Swedish security agencies talk to the American security agencies to know, do we have any guys who has entered the United States who you know are participating in this? Oh yeah, these guys. And then they got an email a couple of days later saying, yeah, you can't come back. So it's ridiculous.
And it's for doing absolutely nothing. I mean, you know, and I've talked about it on my show plenty of times before, but you know, to be banned from the UK, it blows my mind after, you know, there are no, you know, like right wing, you know, nationalist style, like terrorist attacks, but it seems on a couple of weeks go by that you don't have a jihadist mowing people down or stabbing people or, you know, stabbing a police officer or shooting at them and sort of things like that. But they want to ban, you know, they ban me from the UK. Because of extremism, but they won't shut down like Saudi funded mosques that openly preach jihad and are like bringing these people in to like resettle them as refugees and as economic migrants and stuff like that. All the buzzwords, right? That are like actually doing terrorism. Like, you know, when I see in Europe all the terrorism that happens, it seems that the state spends almost all of their time and energy on harassing nationalists. When like actual terrorists, like people that actually like for a political ideology, like commit acts of violence and terror, they just like have an open door policy and they'll give you like a free place to live.
Well, I guess it's because we are an actual threat to the system, because we don't just seek to throw out the invaders, you know, to get rid of the Muslims and the Jews and stuff. We also want to have another system of government, you know. These democracies that brought us all these problems in like the blink of an eye. If we look at the history of Europe, we have like thousands of years of history, and all the things with diversity, multiculturalism and degeneracy, it has happened instantly. It's like in just a handful of decades, it's gone from 0% foreigners to, yeah, in some countries, 20-30% foreigners. So the system that brought these things to our societies, of course we want to dismantle those systems. And so if we have a democracy that clearly doesn't work, that only works to destroy our societies, well, no wonder they want to harass us and keep us down, because we want to tear down the whole thing, not just get rid of the foreigners.
Well, exactly, because I mean the economic elites, the, you know, the capitalist class, the radical leftists, the Marxists, and the traitorous politicians. I mean, they're the ones that bring them here. I mean, we of course need to justly punish those that commit crimes, right, against our people and are invading our land. Like, that's not a question. But they're here because the politicians want them here, and the business interests want them here for cheap labor and things like that. The bankers want them there, you know, in this giant push towards the Kalergi plan of destroying the European people. I mean, this really as a struggle cannot be identified only on the racial issue insofar as just getting foreigners out. I mean, you're totally right on that. This has to be an entire revolution. I mean, there's no other way to say that, you know, one that because this entire structure is just one giant tower of Babel that has to be torn down, because it is so wicked and so evil that it just works to destroy everything organic in human existence of race and nation, identity, culture, religion, all these things. So maybe you could tell me and our listeners a little bit about like your testimony, right? So what got you into nationalism? How long have you been in it? And I know you've been very active for a good amount of time. So tell us kind of how you've seen nationalism evolve and change throughout the time you've been involved in it.
Well, it started when I was like 6 years old, because, you know, we had a lot of foreigners in our vicinity where I grew up. So I instantly disliked them, but I didn't have any frame of reference, you know, an ideological thing to pin it to. So, but then in the 90s, there was nationalist awakening in Germany, and I got very interested in that. And then I just, we didn't really have any internet back then. So as a young boy, you know, I was just very interested in nationalism. I could, you know, when I saw, things from the 30s, and I got very excited, and but I couldn't do any actual research, so I just you know went with the good guys and just trusted my instincts. So, but I didn't really have the, you know, the baggage. I didn't have any knowledge of what was actually going on. So it was only in recent years that I really got to, you know, learn about the crimes of the Jews and read the, you know, Kevin MacDonald's Culture of Critique and such, you know, so you, the more you know, the more you become red-pilled, you become an actual nationalist, because you have to know what goes on behind the scenes to really grasp the problems. Because when you just look at Europe today, I mean, you can see plenty of problems just walking down the street. But as you said, you know, those problems aren't solved just by getting rid of these people. You have to, you know, do something that, you know, have a system that is truly nationalistic with the people. All politics being done in favor of the people and not just other people, elites and such.
Which seems like such common sense, right? I mean, the idea that, like, so the government, which is supposed to be the representative of the people, the will of the people, actually, like, stands up for the people. Like, that's not a radical statement, I don't think. It's such painful common sense.
Yeah, I mean, if you read the article that was in the paper this weekend regarding our website, because we made a website that was, you know, kind of in the vein of the Daily Stormer, you know, it's a new site with a lot of humor and with a no holds barred, you know, we talk about the Jews and all those things. And then they make a big headline that says, Jew hatred, the alt-right comes to Denmark. So it's actually quite funny. We had a lot of laughs, you know, reading that article, and because one of the most basic things we say is Denmark for the Danes. It seems like the most natural thing in the world. I mean, who could possibly against Denmark being for the Danes or Japan being for the Japanese? It's like
it's common sense.
Yeah, it's absolutely every child knows that's the truth. But how could you possibly be against that? But then they frame it like it's racism. They say they promote a pure white racial state with biological racism. If that's how you want to frame it, I mean, be my guest. All we are saying is Denmark for the Danes. But if you frame that as a white country with biological racism, I mean, I don't care what words you use. It's the same difference. You're basically
it's having a home for your extended family. That's it. That's what nationalism is. It's taking care of your people, your family in your own nation. It, that's your home. It's treating, you know, the guy that lives down the street or your doctor or the garbage man, whoever it is, as your brother or, you know, the woman you see in the grocery store, you know, as your sister. It's having that community tie to them through blood and culture and history and a shared destiny. I mean, this is normal, natural, and healthy. I mean, this is why, you know, we've looked and seen these reports come out about racism in children. And, you know, they're saying that, you know, kids that are only a few weeks, few months old, exhibit racist behaviors, microaggressions. You know, they prefer to be held by people that look like them and stuff like that. And this just isn't whites. It's blacks, it's Asians, it's every group, right? You have a natural born loyalty to your people. And what we're saying is normal, but you're right. They love all those buzzwords, don't they? You know, neo-Nazis, white supremacists, da-da-da-da-da. If they want to dress it up like that, fine. But all we want is a home for our extended family.
Absolutely. And I wrote an article responding to the news article that just said, yeah, but I mean, thanks for the article. And we really enjoyed it because it's all true. you know, the more... civic nationalists, if they had an article written about them, they would be all like, oh, no, we're not racist at all. We just believe in certain values. We just believe in certain freedoms. But, you know, those values and freedoms, they aren't worth anything if they aren't meant only for your people, because they can be extended to anyone. And, I mean, if a Somali calls himself a Dane and learns to speak Danish and celebrates Christmas, I mean, that doesn't make him a Dane. And that's the difference between us and the you know, the alt-right, the civic nationalists, that we actually take the sides of our own people and recognize that we exist. I mean, it's the most basic things that we promote that are somehow controversial. It's pretty funny, actually.
Well, I totally agree. I mean, you mentioned the alt-right as one of the big problems, which, of course, we've seen in Europe and in the United States. There's this push towards civic nationalism by some people, actually, that are like actual hardcore real nationalists. Because they're trying to be clever. They're trying to, you know, that they think the Jews and the media and everyone, you know, if we just pretend not to be, you know, extremist, quote unquote, where anything can be labeled extreme, right? You know, now it's extremist in the United States to say that gay marriage is inappropriate, that's not real marriage. You know, that's You're an anti-gay extremist. They'll use that phrase for literally everything. But there's a lot of people that just go along with this kind of civic nationalist route. Can you give me a little bit of insight about what's going on in terms of, like, with, you know, especially young Danes, on the push towards nationalism, what the movement looks like, and then, like, what's going on in your country in regards to these alt-right civic nationalist types?
Well, we have a party in the parliament that's called the Danish People's Party, and that's been there since 1995, and that's classic. We could call it kosher nationalism or civic nationalism, because I mean they use the Danish flag. They talk about they are the People's Party, but they're actually not the People's Party. But we have two or three new parties that have also started, and they have basically the same program. They don't take their own side. You know, they don't recognize the existence of the Danes. It's the same thing with anyone can become a Dane. So in the sense of the political parties, it looks pretty bleak right now. But as I've made known before, I mean, I don't think the solution to this problem will come through elections as such. We need to, you know, create some communities outside of the system, you know, to be an actual alternative, because the system is rigged to, you know, we could never get 50% of the population as nationalist parties. It's pretty much impossible today, also because of the huge number of immigrant voters that basically make the elections, you know, a fraud, a scam. So,
And that's the biggest thing that, I mean, you know, looking here, just at the 2010 census, which of course things have gotten worse for non-Hispanic whites, were 61% of the population. So whites are said, I love how they like to play these word games and stuff like that. They say that whites are still 75% of the country. I guess if you count millions upon millions upon millions of non-whites as white, then I guess on your government statistics, that's the fact. But, you know, in terms of non-Hispanic whites, we're only 61% of the population. We're the majority of deaths. We're the minority of births. I mean, this is sort of demographic displacement. I mean, just look at Alabama with the Roy Moore case. Turnout was one of the big reasons for that, and increasing Latino turnout. That when they bring these foreigners in, they instantly register them to vote. And there's just not enough of us to be able to, like, do this long, like the Jews were able to do with their march to the institutions, to take decades and generations to, you know, slowly work ourselves in and gain power and infrastructure. We don't have that time, because we're going to be like an Afrikaner and Boer style minority by the time we could march through all those institutions. We don't have time for that. Now, what's the current demographic situation in your country? I know, of course, with immigration is a huge problem, low birth rates for native Danes. But what's the demographics currently?
Well, they're pretty bad, actually, because whenever you see some charts on Twitter or someplace like that, they say, like, today we have like 3% Muslims, and in 2050 it'll be like 9%. It's like, what? We passed those numbers like many, many years ago, and because the statistics that the government keeps, they're not at all accurate, because once they get citizenship, they are pulled out of the statistics, even though the statistics is called, you know, immigrants or descendants of immigrants. But once they become Danes by passport, then they disappear. So some people have made calculations as to what the real numbers are, and we're approaching a million in Denmark, if we haven't already, and that's about 18-20% of the population. So
that's the thing. New Danes, right? New Germans, new Austrians.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing they say here about, you know, in terms of like American values, with these Hispanics, and, you know, they get more left. They actually get more hostile to us the more generations go on. And we can see this with the Muslims in Europe, too. So many of these terrorists, I mean, of course, they're terrorists that come in, you know, right from Syria or Saudi Arabia, stuff like that. But so many of them are second and third generation. So these are people that have been raised in the West. They realize they are not Western. Just like, you know, if you put a cat in an oven, it doesn't make it biscuits, right? You know, you can't take a Somali and make him a Dane, or make him a Spaniard, or make him a Canadian. You know, do that. You're born into your extended family. And, they really try and play around with things. I mean, they've said here in the United States, for illegal immigration, we have 11 million illegal immigrants. And they've had that exact same number for, at this point, an entire generation. And as we can sit and watch, and Border Patrol is arresting tens and tens of thousands of people every year coming into, you know, the country from the southern border. And we have an extremely porous border. We have almost no enforcement when it comes to visa overstays and stuff like that. So the idea that immigration numbers have remained consistent for 25 years with basically an open borders policy is absolute lunacy, but they have no problem lying. I mean, I saw it in Sweden too. They, you know, they're going after a leaker, you know, from a police department, I guess, that, actually released the real, crime statistics, because it's all immigrants, right? And then native born Swedes are mostly not white Swedes. They're non-white Swedes, quote unquote Swedes, that are doing these crimes. I mean, is it really the same way in Denmark as well?
Yeah, it's exactly the same. I mean, it's a bit worse in Sweden. You know, Sweden has become its own meme because of how bad things are. But it's pretty much the same in Scandinavia, in all of Scandinavia, in Norway and Denmark as well. But you know, the statistics regarding not just crimes, because when they looked at the actual rapes in Sweden, it was close to 100%, if not 100%. There are almost no rapes being done by actual native Swedes. It's all immigrant rapes. But when they looked at the certain age group from 0 to 44 with the in the demographic situation, they found out recently that in 2024, I mean, that's less than 7 years from now, the Swedes will be a minority in that age group. And that's the age group where you can have children. And that's what counts. So when it comes to
it's terrifying.
to having babies, it's over in less than 7 years. That's why they that's why they launched the project Free Sweden, the new project Free Sweden, on basis of those numbers, because the fact that they will become a minority, that's almost unavoidable at this point. But how they will fight back, that's by being realistic. And demographically, it looks pretty bleak, but we can still turn it around, but it's not going to be easy.
Well, and speaking of turning things around, because one of the most important things in nationalism is, of course, having solidarity. And, you know, there's this strong push, you know, of course, groups like the Nordic Resistance Movement, that suggest, a united North is the way to be able to bring things together, to bring the Northern countries together due to, you know, a shared, ethnic heritage, shared culture, identities, and instead of being smaller countries that can, you know, be easily attacked by, you know, the Jewish imperialist system, instead working to come together to have just one united North. What are your thoughts on that, of the, you know, all the folks in Scandinavia and such coming together as one, to have a new united North under, you know, nationalist principles?
I mean, if we're ever going to cooperate, it's got to be, in a Nordic Union. That's basically the only thing that could work, because we could become independent on all fronts, you know, not just militarily and such, and economically, but also with our industries. We together we have you know, all the components to make a union work and being totally independent. But you know, how are we going to do it if we're going to do it on all fronts? You know, having the same flag and one government. I mean, we could just have a corporation on all fronts. I mean, there's many ways you can do it, but you know, it seems foolish to use the construction of the EU, which is obviously working to destroy the nation states, and instead having just a Nordic Union, because we have had it before. I mean, it didn't turn out too well, but it did last for a century. But I mean, if we could find some way to cooperate peacefully, which all things point to that being possible, because we don't really have any brother wars anymore, or any basis for having any brother wars, because we don't have any major disputes. So I don't see why not.
I mean, I'd like to keep our flags
and stuff.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, here in the United States, you know, the divide between Northerners and Southerners, of course, we fought a war over it, right? You know, strong regional differences, but the push is that we must be white nationalists. We must push to be able to have our own nation state here in the empire, you know, and that's where independence, I think, is so important. I mean, what we're talking about is real freedom, where instead of having bureaucrats and financiers and rootless cosmopolitans defining how we live, it's instead empowering nations and communities to actually be in charge of their own destiny. And that seems to be, I mean, it's one, it's in accordance with international law. I mean, the United Nations declarations on self-determination give us the right, and natural law gives us the right to be able to have our own nations You know, for our people. By the way, question for you: the rise of the alt-right and nationalism in general is incredibly young, right? And it goes against the stereotype the media always puts out of, being an old movement, people wanting the good old days. Instead, it's such a youth-driven movement.
Yeah.
What is the youth culture like in Denmark in regards to nationalism?
I mean, if you look at the alt-right and basically all nationalists that I meet, it's only young people. It's not even a mixed age group. It's pretty much only young people. So, the future is pretty bright regarding, modern nationalism. I went to a lecture recently where it was more of a, an older age group, and they just were bewildered because they were all the civic nationalist type, and you could see that they hated what was going on in the society, but it was clear that they didn't feel like they had anywhere to turn because they aren't part of any real nationalism. They're just part of, this weird culture war against Muslims that is basically, it goes nowhere. It's easy to hate Muslims, but that doesn't solve the problems. But if you look at the young people, they are very, woke to the JQ and, they know what's going on, and it's a completely different thing. So I'm very, very thankful that it's the young people that are waking up to real nationalism as opposed to being old people.
Well, exactly. So, I mean, the civic nationalism, it just drives me crazy. It's like, we must oppose, Islam and Sharia law in order to have like more abortions and feminism. And it's like, I don't really know if that's what I want to fight about, like.
Yeah. I mean, if you go out on the street and you say no more mosques, or we don't want any burqas in our country, or we don't want halal food. I mean, yeah, of course, but all those things wouldn't exist anyway if we had proper nationalism, because these groups wouldn't be in our country. So it's not going after this or that Muslim because they're just a symptom of the problem. So.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And, reaching out to people, of course, art is one of the most important things. And I think most people, my listeners would be really familiar with a lot of the cartoons and stuff you do. How did you get into art, and what kind of drives you that? Because like creating art, whether it's humorous or serious, is such an important thing. It's taking the power away from the mass media. And instead, we're creating our own things for us. And I think that's such an important step for us in terms of seceding kind of in our mind and culturally away from the enemy propaganda that they tell us, is the acceptable media. So have you always been into art, or what kind of drove you to it?
Well, I've always been, been drawing just for fun, but I had a lot of years where I didn't draw at all, but it just happened by accident, really, because, it was on an internet forum. We started posting a couple of drawings, and then I started making them regularly. So it happened all by accident, but I wasn't really doing anything before that. So it's just, I just continue doing it. I mean, that's one of the, if I could give any advice to anyone doing any activism, is just keep doing it, because eventually it's going to amount to something, or there will be some payoff at the end if you just keep working. I mean, whatever you do, just you stick to it and there will be results.
Well, and it's like, Commander George Lincoln Rockwell said, no matter what you do, be a fanatic, because fanatics are the ones who change history. Whether you're a doctor or a teacher or a garbage man or a farmer or an artist, I mean, whatever you do, do it with your entire spirit, because that's what changes things. That's what allows you to be able to rise above, mediocrity, to be able to really make a difference in your society, in your community, in your family, and as yourself. I mean, that's what nationalism calls for. Bettering yourself, bettering your family, bettering your people. It's about building ourselves up. We're never going to reach perfection, but we always need to be pushing forward. While liberalism and conservatism is about tearing us down. Conservatism is just a slower process of tearing us down into the muck of all the stuff we see in the modern world. So as we're coming to the end of our show, as we're going to be leaving our listeners for an exciting week, and then going into the weekend, what is the ultimate white pill, to give them a little bounce in their step as our listeners head off, from what you see in terms of the growth of nationalism in Denmark, Europe, the United States, whatever is the biggest white pill that you see, what would that be?
Well, I just had a Christmas dinner at my house with a bunch of nationalists, and what I saw there was a lot of young people. None of them were smoking. They were in, all of them were in good shape, you know. As opposed to if you had a Christmas party 10 years ago, people watching television and you know, playing video games. I mean, at least we're seeing the young people today that are coming to our side. It's, I mean, they're very dedicated, and they are, you know, they live wholesome lives. And as long as we, you know, drop all our bad habits, there are a lot of bad habits in the modern world. And as long as we focus on nationalism, we can do a great many things.
I totally agree with you. Just our local chapter of the Traditionalist Worker Party, we're going on a camping retreat this weekend, you know, to do hiking. And I mean, it's cold, it's winter. But, you know, trying to really instill that spirit in our men, that's the same sort of thing, you know, working to be able to better ourselves, to build that fraternity, and to get young people really engaged, that they don't have to be part of the system, they can be part of something better. But Klaus, thank you so much for all the work that you do, for your people, for us, you know, all the amazing artwork.
Likewise.
All the things you're doing is so inspirational. And thank you for fighting the fight, and thank you for joining me here today. It was a real pleasure. I hope to have you on again sometime soon. And I want to thank my listeners. This has been a great week. Super exciting. I appreciate all the feedback we get. I hope everyone goes and enjoys a great weekend as you're preparing for Christmas or Yule. You know, spend time with your family, your comrades, and let's have a great weekend. So thank you, everyone. I'll be back next week with another edition of The Daily Traditionalist. I hope you have a great weekend, and hail victory.
Listening to The Daily Traditionalist on Radio Arian.